You'll find engaging illustrations, colorful layouts, and helpful charts in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition.
Let's be frank. A dangerous movement, undetected by many, but real, is now challenging and eroding a great tradition of religious freedom.
These religious leaders would do the world a great deal more good if they would call their people to obedience to those Ten Commandments instead of passing whims of the environmental movement.
I've always said any church that doesn't practice excommunication does not love their people.
Military families in Asia love Issues Etc.
Issues Etc.
Well, you would be amazed at what a pastor can get through, what he can push through in the name of evangelism. If he says, for the sake of evangelizing the youth, we need to do this, it's very likely that sooner or later that, whatever it is going to happen. For the sake of evangelizing the community, we need to do this. Once that term evangelism is tacked onto any idea, it suddenly somehow becomes a good idea. Not all of them are good ideas, by the way, but evangelism kind of serves as that trump card that allows it to be played and for people to say, well, if it's going to help with evangelism. Now, part of that is the natural sense of guilt that Christians have about evangelism. As long as someone has a bright idea, at least I don't have to have a bright idea about evangelism. It's also that the temptation to believe that there's a silver bullet out there that will solve all our evangelistic problems and meet all our evangelistic needs. One of those was, well, over the last three decades, the seeker-friendly movement said, in order to evangelize the world, we need to sound more like the world. And you know what, folks? Those churches, by and large, are full. It seems to have worked. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about evangelizing the world and church finances and faith with Pastor Larry Peters here in the first half hour of the program. We'll spend a little time with Pastor Hans Feeney. He has some political advice for President Trump. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about media coverage of the sexual misconduct allegations against Willow Creek's founder, Bill Hybels. We'll round everything off today talking about whether or not religion will matter in the midterm elections. Henry Olson, Senior Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., will be our guest. Feel free to join us with your questions or your comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and our listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about two issues, evangelizing the world and church finances and faith, Pastor Larry Peters. He's senior pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in Clarksville, Tennessee, author of a recent column for Pastoral Meanderings, his blog titled, Craving Approval is Not Evangelism and Perhaps Funds Are a Barometer. Larry, welcome back.
Hey, Todd, how are you today?
Very well. It was about 30 years ago that some very energetic and enthusiastic pastors in evangelicalism decided to test their theory that in order to evangelize the world, the church should sound more like the world. And thus was born what I think had been called a seeker-friendly movement. Those churches, Larry, by and large, who've tried that, are full. They are some of the fullest churches on Sunday mornings. Has their tactic of evangelism, sound more like the world, really worked?
Well, the churches are full. No one can deny that. But the question is whether the gospel is being proclaimed. Welcome is a good thing if it brings people into a place where they can hear Jesus Christ and Him crucified. But without the gospel being the end, the means is just a means. We're not in the welcome business, and we're not in the consumer satisfaction business. Our job is to proclaim faithfully Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And when that doesn't happen at the end, the means is not necessarily a good thing. So if the church is full but the gospel is not being proclaimed explicitly, then I don't know whether it's a good thing at all. And in fact, I might say that because there are churches, like even some in our own Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, who look over the fence and see that full parking lot, there are great temptations on our part to do exactly the same thing, to minimize the distinctiveness of the gospel in order to maximize the friendliness and the welcome that people will receive and the good time that will be had by all. I don't think it's always a good thing. There has to be some barometer that judges the faithfulness of what is being proclaimed.
Are you saying that perhaps what has been successful there is simply satisfying or achieving the approval of the world?
I think that's exactly it. I went to my doctor the other day. I get back at work, and I get an email with a consumer satisfaction survey. My doctor wants to know, was I happy going to the doctor? I don't know of anybody who's happy going to the doctor. Usually, you go because you have a problem. Oftentimes, the advice, the counsel, the medicine that he gives you in order to help answer your health concerns is not something you want to hear. When the doctor tells me that I weigh too much and I'm not active enough, that's not something I want to hear, but it may be the truth that I need to hear. And I think the same thing can be said for the church. When we tell people that they're welcome, when we tell people that we care about what they feel, when we tell people that we're concerned about their happiness, that we want them to feel at home, and nothing goes beyond that. And I think, you know, you mentioned Bill Hybels. I think it was Willow Creek that did a survey some years ago and found out that they weren't sure whether they were making people into the more mature Christians that they thought they were. The people were coming because they were enjoying, because they were finding good entertainment, for lack of a better term, on Sunday morning. And if that's the case, then we're working at odds with the gospel. We're not helping it in any way, shape, or form.
Along with that has come not just the way the church sounds or how the church communicates. I think perhaps the best intentioned among the original seeker movement pastors and congregations were simply, let's sound in a way that isn't going to immediately alienate the unbeliever, or in their case, they would call it the seeker. But along with that came a lot of other things. They didn't want to look like church anymore. They didn't want it to have any trappings that would indicate that you were in a church. I've actually visited Willow Creek, and it has been a decade or so or more ago, but I walked in and I honestly could have been on the campus of any big community college. There was no indication whatsoever that I was in any kind of church setting.
Well, that's exactly right. When the building is modeled after any generic public building, the mall, a community college, whatever, when there is nothing inside the building that explicitly draws attention to the gospel, and when there is nothing coming from the pulpit that is a full proclamation of that distinctive word that is going to be heard only through the church and not anywhere else, then, you know, the whole end is screwed up. I think the desire is certainly right. You know, we don't want to be an impediment to the gospel, but we kind of lost our way along the way, and I'm speaking here generically of that segment of Christianity, lost their way when they confused the welcome of people into a place with the welcome of Christ that comes through His blood shed, through death overcome, and through the resurrection.
You say that Christianity today is, the term you use, rather pathetic. What do you mean by that?
It's when the most important thing to us is whether people like us, whether people have a good feeling about us, whether, you know, somewhere along the way they have a, they've received a good impression of who we are. When that becomes the driving thing, then the distinctiveness of the gospel is almost certainly lost. It really doesn't matter what the world thinks of us if we are being faithful to Jesus Christ. I'm certainly not advocating that the church be unfriendly or unwelcome or ignore people who are not yet of the kingdom. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that as soon as we become creatures who depend upon the recognition, the appreciation, the liking of other people, then we're merely pandering to them, and the whole gospel distinctiveness that is to be the mark of who we are as the people of God, and in particular the church as a lighthouse in the world, that distinctiveness is lost, and it's a sad thing. It's a sad thing. It's sort of like, you know, the politician who thinks that that politician can be elected by telling every audience he sees what they want to hear without realizing that those things are in competition. Sometimes telling people what they want to hear is in direct competition with being faithful in your proclamation of Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And the other thing is, I think it's pathetic because finally, in the end, we've lost sight of the one promise that makes all the difference in the world, and that's from Isaiah 55. God has promised that if His word is proclaimed, that seed will be planted, and it will bear the fruit and return to Him the result that He intends. And I think, you know, the sad truth is we become enamored by statistics, even consumer approval statistics, to the point where we've bought into the idea that how people feel about us is necessarily the most important sign of our effectiveness. And the most important sign of our effectiveness is whether at the end of the day we can say that we have not compromised the truth of Jesus Christ. We have proclaimed Him crucified and risen, and we have done so in a welcome way, as Paul would define it. We've spoken the truth in love.
Does this tactic of accommodating the world or seeking the world's approval, does that ultimately teach individual Christians that they need to seek the world's approval too, not just congregations, but individual Christians?
Well, sure. We're silent in front of things that we know that are wrong because we don't want to risk offending anybody, whether they're people in the workplace or people in our family or people down the block. As Christians, we just kind of have surrendered our moral authority here to say anything about the things that are wrong, because we've confused the idea of judge not, lest ye be judged, with the idea that we can't say anything to anybody because our house isn't perfectly in order. The second thing is that we've kind of lost the idea that we exist for a larger purpose, and that is for the work of the kingdom. And the work of the kingdom endures, you know, long after we are here and gone. I think as individuals, we are so afraid in this day and age of offending people or of doing something so that people won't like us that in many respects we've lost our voice. And again, my point is not to say that we should be offensive. That isn't the point at all. But we shouldn't compromise the truth for the sake of winning over a few friends here and there on earth.
Finally, on that subject, the term relevance is often used, I think, maybe as a label for seeking the approval of the world. You say this: the church will not die because of irrelevance, but because she has forgotten whose she is and why she is. Explain that to us.
Well, we always worry about being irrelevant, which is a judgment that people make when they think, you know, something is not needed or not important. As long as people die, the church is relevant. The gospel is relevant. As long as people labor with guilt or shame, the church is relevant and the gospel is relevant. As long as, you know, children come into this world, the gospel is relevant, the church is relevant. We are relevant not because we make ourselves relevant. We are relevant because the things that have infected our world and our humanity are the things that God has answered through his son, Jesus Christ. And as long as these things, whether they are recognized by the world as being of supreme importance or not, as long as these things are here, we are automatically relevant. We don't have to do anything to earn that relevance. That relevance is a given because of that. And as soon as we stop addressing sin and guilt, as soon as we stop addressing death, as soon as we stop addressing the sacredness of life, then at that point in time, we lose our birthright as Christians. We've surrendered the gospel, and we may be relevant to the moment, but we are certainly irrelevant to God's purpose and plan. I remember a quote, I can't remember who said it, but the quote is simple. The church that marries the spirit of the age will be a widow in the next generation. And that has always stuck with me.
When we come back, we're going to talk about church finances and faith with Pastor Larry Peters on this Wednesday, August the 8th. He's senior pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in Clarksville, Tennessee, author of recent columns for Pastoral Meanderings titled Craving Approval is Not Evangelism and Perhaps Funds Are a Barometer. Stay tuned.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Some Bible passages make us more uncomfortable than others. Take, for example, any passage about money. But just because a topic makes us uncomfortable doesn't mean we shouldn't face it head on. That's exactly what the August issue of the Lutheran Witness has done, with articles on poverty, generosity, money management, and more. You won't want to miss it. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
The cross is always relevant. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Ask the average evangelical about infant baptism, and they are likely to emphatically tell you that is a man-made doctrine, man-made practice. The Bible nowhere teaches it, and the Bible does not tell us to baptize our infants. Is this true?
Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We'll be opening up the scriptures and looking at who the scriptures say baptism is for. We'll take a look at the doctrine of original sin and how it relates to infant baptism. And we'll also take a look at the benefits of baptism, who's doing the work, and even take a look at a biblical account of baptismal regeneration.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case for infant baptism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Larry Peters is our guest. We're turning to the subject of church finances and faith. He's author of recent columns for Pastoral Meanderings titled Craving Approval is Not Evangelism and Perhaps Funds Are a Barometer. You could read both of these columns under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. So, Larry, we spent the last 15 minutes talking about how numbers are not necessarily an indicator of the faithfulness, the orthodoxy, or the health of a Christian congregation. Are we going to spend the next 10 minutes saying that, at least in terms of finances, they are?
Well, I think it's the same truth, just the other side of it, the other perspective of it. Those churches that are giving people what they want, but may not necessarily be at all faithful to the gospel, seem unafraid to ask for support, seem unafraid to challenge people to make sure that whatever it is that they do goes on unabated, certainly not for lack of people or funds. while at the same time it's true that there are places where the gospel is being faithfully proclaimed, where God's people gather in earnest every week, and they struggle. They struggle to keep the doors open. They struggle to keep a pastor there in place. They struggle to find the funds to do the work of the kingdom in their corner of the world. I guess all I'm saying is that we want something quick and easy. We want to figure out a means and a methodology to make the practical side of the kingdom work. Finances are important. You can't diminish them. But yet, the other side of the coin is that stewardship doesn't come naturally to anybody, and not even to a Christian to whom the gospel has been faithfully proclaimed. We need to teach people about the grace of giving, and we need to teach people about the grace of giving by teaching them about the God whose grace is regularly given and made present through word and sacrament week after week after week. I think it's probably to our problem that we talk too little about money. I mentioned in that column Jesse Duplantis and how he has appealed to his followers. He needs another new jet. He's hoping that his supporters will cough up about $54 million. And to tell you the truth, I'm pretty sure they will. He asks, and he informs them how important this is to the work of the kingdom, and somehow or another the funds arise. I guess what I'm saying is that I'm not so sure that we are as willing to put the cause of the kingdom before our people and to do the harder work of teaching stewardship than what we have been in the past.
You have been a pastor for a long time. Why do you think it is so difficult for pastors to broach that subject with their people?
Well, the people don't want to hear it. And no pastor wants to talk about it. No pastor wants to talk about something that people are not going to like hearing. I mean, that's our Achilles heel as pastors, is we want to be loved and we want to be respected and we want to be appreciated just as much as anybody else. And so whenever you bring up the subject of money, it's a touchy subject. Secondly, is that we've been taught in our culture that, you know, this is an individual thing, that this is, you know, we don't talk about money. It's either rude or else it's just plain something that is inappropriate. And so, you know, it's a subject that sort of has a taboo to it. Unless we're building, you know, buildings, putting up brick and mortar, I think it's easy for us to talk then, because it somehow or another seems more selfless in that respect. Or when we're talking about putting up a brick-and-mortar building or a wood and tin building on a mission field somewhere, it's easier for us to talk about it in those concerns. It's much more difficult for us to get up on the pulpit on Sunday morning and to do that. And I think, you know, that we recognize this because part of the catechism is, for us, the table of duties. And the table of duties simply lay out in blunt terms from the scriptures the things that should be obvious, and the things that we don't want to hear, but we do need to hear.
Okay, so why then don't people want to hear about it?
Because of sin, our greatest fear is this idea of sacrifice, of giving up something that's important to us. And whether we like to admit it or not, you know, money is a pretty important thing. It may not be able to purchase happiness, but we've been taught by the world that it will allow you to rent happiness for a while. And along the way, you know, it's sort of a jealous thing on our part. This is the stuff we've worked for. This is the stuff we've earned. And to give it to any cause represents a pretty significant investment on us and a pretty big decision on our part.
So it's something, in other words, it's something that's very near and dear to us.
Exactly. And nobody is saying that money isn't important. Scriptures don't dismiss money as if it's unimportant. In fact, just the opposite. They say that it is obvious just how important it is. And Jesus shows that over and over and over again. Whether he talks about the widow and her coin, or whether he talks about Caesar's coin and whose image is on it, all the way along, Jesus acknowledges that money is valuable. What he tries to get us to look at is to see money not through the lens of the world and our fears and our wants, but to see it through the lens of faith.
I'm wondering about something you just said a moment ago. Unless we're building buildings, I think that has been kind of an experience of many, many a congregation and pastor and individual Christian, that suddenly when we start talking bricks and mortar, as they say, then people aren't as nervous about talking about money. Maybe the pastors aren't either. And somehow the money flows. When it's not something that is tangible, that you'll be able to say, ah, we broke ground and we closed on the mortgage on such and such a date, it's much more difficult. Why do you think that's true, Pastor Peters?
Well, I think there are a couple things. One is we kind of honestly don't have a realistic understanding of all the things that are needed to do God's work in a place. And there's a part of us that you know, is kind of embarrassed by the fact that we spend money on copy paper and paper clips and postage stamps and things like that. I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is that we look for things that endure, things that last. And sin has done a pretty darn good job of building into our hearts the idea that concrete things like buildings last, but causes don't, or the work of the gospel doesn't. You know, now the flashy style evangelistic work, the stuff that sends people into the far corners of the world, that's the kind of thing that oftentimes does gather the support of God's people. But the ordinary evangelism that happens, you know, down the block and across town, that's a little bit harder to gauge. And it's harder for us to understand whether our dollars are doing something. Now, you know, part of it is, you know, we look through the eyes of sin, but the other part of it is that we have a different kind of expectation for all of this as well.
I would note here finally, Larry, that if you read through the New Testament, while I think a lot of the stuff that people think is about money is not, in fact, about money, the parable of the talents and some of those things. But when the apostle finds a need in the church, especially Paul, he has absolutely no compunction about very boldly, very specifically, addressing fellow Christians and saying, help these people out. This is what you ought to do as Christians. What are your thoughts there, Larry?
I think that's absolutely the case. And I think we have been hesitant to ask. What does Jesus say? He says, you don't have because you do not ask. And there may be a truthful application of those words to the way that we support the work of God's kingdom. I think the other part of it is that when we talk about the work of God's kingdom, we talk about it as if it is somehow or another less real than the bricks and mortar of our buildings. I remember being touched by someone who said one time, you know, a person who came to the door of the church had a financial need. It was beyond, you know, the amount that we could help. We didn't know who this person was from Adam. We did everything to try and match them to the agencies that were in our community as well as the help that we could provide from our congregation. And he comes back and he says, well, if you can't help me pay for this, he says, you can't help me at all. And I think the truth is oftentimes Christians feel exactly that way. When we say that, we diminish the power of the gospel. Just because we cannot help every financial need and support every good cause out there doesn't mean that we are not doing good work. That when we proclaim the gospel, we are bestowing upon the hearer an eternal treasure. And I think when we begin to see that, then the material treasures of the moment, it becomes easier for us to direct those toward that eternal cause, first of all. And secondly, we see that those material treasures are not the lasting and the eternal treasures that we thought they were. We understand, you know, why we are here and what is our purpose both as individuals and what is our calling as the church. And I think sometimes the truth is we act as if the work of the kingdom wasn't real work. If you love your neighbor, that means that you will make sure your neighbor has something to eat and a warm place to stay and medical care needs met and so on, but you're not helping your neighbor if what you're doing is proclaiming the gospel. Now again, before somebody jumps, I'm not saying that we should be aloof or ignorant of the material needs of our neighbors, but we meet those material needs not as the end, but as part of reaching them with the eternal gospel.
Folks, you will find some great free stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, managing the gifts God gives us. LCMS Stewardship Ministry, lcms.org/stewardship. Pastor Larry Peters is senior pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in Clarksville, Tennessee. He's author of recent columns for Pastoral Meanderings titled Craving Approval is Not Evangelism and Perhaps Funds Are a Barometer. Larry, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Todd. And by the way, I would commend the work of Heath Curtis. He's done some really good stuff in the vocation and its relationship to stewardship with the LCMS.
When we come back, we're going to get some political advice for President Trump. Pastor Hans Feeney will be our guest, senior contributor to The Federalist. His article there, titled For a Successful Legacy, President Trump Needs to Move Past His Rocky Balboa Persona, is already getting a lot of heat. We'll find out how he responds. Terry Matting will join us after that. Talk about media coverage of sexual misconduct allegations against Willow Creek's founder, Bill Hybels. Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
The Lord has gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. These gifts can be received every week at both Grace Lutheran Church and Trinity Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Join us for divine services at Grace on Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., as well as every Wednesday at 11 a.m., or at Trinity every Sunday at 11 a.m. Grace is located at 3310 East Pawnee and Trinity at 611 South Erie. Gather with us around our Lord and His giving His gifts to us. See you soon.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry. lcms.org/deaconess.
Evangelical and Catholic. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio. First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas. Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri, Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois, Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama, and Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.